So I'm glad you're joining us today as we start a brand new series called The Rich and Satisfying Life, and you'll see where we're going with this over the next 3 weeks, and we just hope you'll join us for all three of those as we engage and look at this important topic. And I'm going to start with a question. It's really one that I've been wrestling with for quite a while, and that is, why has Christianity become so resistible? Why is it that people struggle when they hear the word Christian, what that means to them? And, there's just a lot of things that go on that you read and you're like, boy, I really wish we wouldn't hang the word Christian around this. For example, so I get emails probably 2-3 times a week from places that tell you the latest in church news. Probably none of you care about church news, okay? That's just something we pastors care about. And so, literally, first thing on the list, Pastor sues two members, former members of his church. So I'm reading this article and going, I've read that in a book somewhere. Don't think you're supposed to sue people from your church, other Christians. I don't know where that happened, but somewhere along the line, it just got off track. And then the next article was about, and I don't know, some of you, we've talked about this because you'd seen it, that Lauren Daigle was under so much criticism because she went on the show and sang a gospel song. I have no idea why, but okay. And everybody, we're just reading stuff all over the place, and I'm like, please stop, please stop, because I think there's things that happen that make Christianity very resistible. People look at it and say, I don't know if I ever want to be that. I don't know if I ever want to follow Jesus, if that's the way it's going to go, if that's what I become. And in fact, if you would ask a group of people who are far from God, have nothing to do with church, they would probably tell you something like this. A Christian is a judgmental, homophobic moralist who think they are the only ones going to heaven and secretly celebrate the fact that everyone else is going to heaven, okay? That's pretty dark, okay? But if you'd ask them, that's the way, I'm just telling you, broad view, Christianity quite often gets looked at in our culture. And I'm like, why? Why is it so resistible? Why do people view us like this? Why is this the way that most people think about Christians? And then, if you open the Gospels, if you take time, do any type of Bible reading, right? You know what you find? That's not what you read, okay? You don't find that anywhere in the accounts of Jesus. You don't find that's the way people approached him, thought about him, embraced him. You don't find any of that. In fact, you find just the opposite, that people who were nothing like Jesus liked Jesus, and that he liked them too, okay? You find that all over the place in the Gospels. All the people Jesus was supposed to avoid and stay away from, he was around those people, okay? Jesus was supposed to avoid the tax collectors. Well, not only did he invite a tax collector to be one of his followers, he then proceeds to invite him to his house so he can invite more tax collectors over, and they just have a big party, because tax collectors in those days, because they worked for the Roman government, were worse than sinners. I mean, that's just the way it was. And there's Jesus. You're not supposed to be around the Samaritans, Jesus. And there he is in Samaritan, talking to a woman at the well, and there he is, okay? And it's like, well, you just encounter these things over and over and over again with Jesus. And I don't know if you have a personal story with this. I do. When we talk about Christianity being resistible and people who have moved away from the faith, this gets very personal for me. And let me explain to you why. And maybe it'll help you understand why we do some of the things we do around here. Because I really care about people who are far from God and people who started off following Jesus and just got derailed by something. And let me tell you how real this is for me. Okay, this is so real. This is really a part of growing up. Okay? So this is my senior class. Okay? Some of you are like, wow, you had 6 people? Really? Wow, you automatically feel sorry for me, right? Okay, the class before me had 3, okay? So, we doubled it. We thought we were awesome, okay? So this was a Christian school that used the church building, and the church kind of started it and got it going, and so there were 6 of us, okay? Now, you would think 6 kids, teenagers, following Jesus, active in their church, okay? You'd think they would end up that way, wouldn't you? You'd think they might still follow Jesus today. You might think they're still on the path of faith, okay? Group 6, half of them don't. This is why this is so real for me. Okay? This is why this is so real for me. Because I have names and faces attached to this. And in fact, I was just reminded of it all over again when we were back in January for my mom's burial, for her funeral. When we were back in Connecticut for that, we're standing at the graveside. Guy comes over. I had not seen him for years. One of the guys up here, it's his father. And I'm like, I didn't expect to see him. I hadn't seen him in years. And he said, you just got to pray for John. He's got to pray for John. John is just wants nothing to do with God, nothing to do with anything Christian, nothing. He's just gone. He's left. He's done. It's over. Now, I've heard that before, but now I have a parent telling me that. Hey, that's the story of my son. That's where he is. And I'm going, what happened? Right? What happened? What happened? How could this be? So we're in church the next day. His brother's there. I'm talking to his brother. And then this lady approaches me. One of the girls in the front row, the girl in the red dress, her name is Amy. Amy's mom comes up to me. You know, I'm talking to her, and she's like, oh, you got to pray for Amy. You got to pray for Amy. Amy wants nothing to do with God, nothing to do with the church. And she goes, but if you look back there, you know, about three rows behind you, there's Amy's daughter. She's in church. But Amy don't have nothing to do with church. She wants nothing to do with God. So middle back there, that is my friend Tim. I have not talked to Tim. Part of my reconnection with a lot of, you know, my classmates started with Facebook because we're literally spread all over the place. So I've been able to connect with Tim's brother. Tim's brother tells me the same thing. Tim wants nothing to do with church. And in fact, his brother really struggles with the whole idea of faith. Okay? Part of the reason, I think some of it is, that the school we went to, the church that was part of that, was very legalistic, okay? Obviously, right? How many senior pictures? Everybody's dressed up, suit tie, right? That was in a book, you know. We had a book, wasn't the Bible. It was the student handbook for the school. And it wasn't just like, here's the standards we want you to do. It was that every standard got a Bible verse attached to it. And do you know, you can make the Bible say all sorts of things. I'm serious, you know. This was, you know, reading the book like, wow, the Bible says you're supposed to wear a tie? Man, I got to find that verse and figure out how we can change that, right? I'm telling you, everything was attached to a verse, okay? The girls were told, you can never, ever, ever wear pants. They had a verse for that, okay? I didn't even know there were pants in the Bible, okay? That's just the way it goes, okay? And so that's the only thing that I tried to wrestle with is that. When a version of Christianity is loaded down with lots of rules, no grace, and no relationship, it is totally resistible. You want to know how people can push back and want nothing to do with faith, nothing to do with Jesus? It's that. When we make it so loaded down with a bunch of rules, no grace, no relationship, it is very easy to push back and say, I don't want anything to do with that. And that's the type of Christianity. So if you wonder why we do some of the things we do around here, because I'm very cautious of this. And I'm just telling you, I have found out within me that if I'm not careful, I revert to this. Well, why do I revert to this? Because this is what was kind of drained in me through school. Not my home church, really, but really this church where school was. That was really just drained in me. That following the rules is how you follow Jesus. And it was lots of rules, there was no grace, there was no relationship, and it's very easy to push back and push away and make it resistible. And there's a reason we do the things that we do around here. Maybe you haven't caught on, maybe you're like, you know, why don't we just do what churches always did? Why don't we say him, and the pastor actually doesn't wear jeans, he actually wears a tie and a suit? Come on, what's going on? Because anything we can do to not make things so resistible, we have to figure out a way to do it. Because this is ultimately the question that I would ask you. If you're like, why can't we just go back to things the way it always be? What is the faith in the next generation worth? Can I ask you that? What is the faith in the next generation worth? Okay? Because most of you sitting here today, you follow Jesus, you're on board. So what's the faith of the next generation worth? Okay? You know what the answer is? Everything. It is worth everything to try to help people come to know Christ and to lead them in a relationship with Jesus. It is worth everything. And anything that we can do to make things so not resistible, because what Jesus called it to is so different than at times what we've made Christianity into, that we have got to recapture what this is all about. So this summer for camp, we had a verse that we asked all the kids to learn. Now, that verse, and I've told you this before, sometimes if you will just change, those of you who've been reading the Bible for a while, if you will change the version or the translation you're using, it'll help you see things very differently. And so it's a good practice to do. If you're just new to reading the Bible, you know, the verses I use up here, I use the New Living Translation because I think it's the simplest and the easiest. And so find a translation you like. There's lots of them in the Bible app that you can choose from. Find one that's good for you, okay? So I'm reading this verse, not the way we had it set up for our kids, but a New Living Translation. I love what it said. And this is Jesus speaking in John 10:10. We're just going to camp out here. Because we need to figure this out. My purpose, Jesus says, is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Now, he's talking about everybody who would follow him. My purpose, Jesus says, is to give them a rich and satisfying life. That's my purpose. That's what Jesus said. That's everything I'm about. I'm about giving people a rich and satisfying life. So I'm reading that, and then I have two questions. Do we really believe this? Do we really believe this? Okay? That Jesus, and all about following Jesus, leads to a rich and satisfying life. Do we absolutely believe that? That that's what happens when we follow Jesus. That the best life, the rich and satisfying life, comes from following Jesus. Or should I ask, do we even experience this? Do we experience this? Because let me tell you, there's lots of versions of Christianity that do not experience Jesus' promise of a rich and satisfying life. Okay? You keep wondering, you know, is something wrong with you? Why are you angry all the time? Okay? Why are you just writing blogs that are just, you know, against everybody? Because that's what happens. Christians are known for more what they're against than what we are for. And that's what happens when you have that version of Christianity that isn't experiencing a rich and satisfying life like Jesus promised. If we don't believe that and we don't experience that, it makes things really difficult. So let me ask you this. If following Jesus leads to a rich and satisfying life, why wouldn't everyone want to follow Jesus? Why wouldn't every church be full? Because, man, we got to follow Jesus. Following Jesus leads to a rich and satisfying life. Why wouldn't everybody want that? And even if you're like, I'm not sure, okay? You know, even if you're like, I'm not sure I believe all this Jesus stuff. Man, these Christians are amazing. They're awesome. They love one another. They take care of one another. They're nicest people. You know, they don't write angry blogs all the time. Okay, they don't go after singers who go on shows trying to just, you know, share a message, right? What would that look like, okay? Why wouldn't everyone want to follow Jesus if following Jesus leads to a rich and satisfying life? That's what I want to explore over the next 3 weeks. So if you have your Bibles and want to turn to John chapter 10, I want to back up and I want us to understand the framework in which Jesus talks about this. Because everybody can pull out this verse and make it say anything, right? Rich and satisfying life, whew, yeah, right? We're sign us up for that. And we don't understand the picture and the framework in which Jesus is speaking about. And so I want us to back up and help us understand that today. That we'd understand that framework because what Jesus is setting up is that invitation. That following me leads to a rich and satisfying life. That is my whole purpose for those who would follow me. So John chapter 10. In John chapter 10, and I don't know why we just keep bumping into this year. We keep running into sheep, right? You ever notice that? Some of you are probably like, another sheep picture? What's going on, right? You know, we're going to have sheep out back next Sunday, right? Well, what's going on, okay? Because it seems like every time we turn around, we bump into this thing. But you got to understand what first century life was in Israel, okay? Your sacrifices, okay, which you had to make, were mainly, okay, sacrificing lambs. Okay, well, you have to have sheep in order to do that. It was just a popular profession. And if you've ever, okay, and probably most of us haven't, because it's just difficult. If you've ever tried to make your way through the book of Leviticus, okay, I mean, most restaurants are out in America. If you ever try to make it through that book of Leviticus, so lambs is on that list of acceptable thing, okay? It was like the only white meat. I mean, there was nothing else. So That was the case. So guess what you had? You had sheep everywhere. You had lots of people who were shepherds. You had lots of sheep. That's just part of their culture. So Jesus uses that because there's something unique with sheep. Sheep, you just can't like leave to themselves, okay? Especially in their time and theirs. Sheep left to themselves would get lost, killed. I mean, they would just end up in the wrong places, okay? That's why when Jesus told the story of a lost sheep, oh yeah, everybody's lost a sheep because they just do that. So they need somebody, a sheep needs somebody to guide them and to lead them more than probably any other animal. Okay, they absolutely need somebody to lead and guide and direct them, because without that, they'll just fall each other right off a cliff. They'll just get into all sorts of trouble. That's the way sheep are. So it made a perfect illustration for Jesus to use over and over again that, hey, sometimes we're just like sheep. Okay, we get lost, we get stranded, we end up in the wrong places, and we need help and guidance. So Jesus is going to use this again to help us understand it. So he starts off in John chapter 10. John writes this for us. And as he's recalling, here's what Jesus said. I tell you the truth, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold, rather than going through the gate, must surely be a thief and a robber. But the one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. Right? That's clear, because we all know what that is. Okay? So let me give you a rendition that an artist did to try to say that sometimes if they didn't have natural terrain that kind of barricaded the sheep, they would create something like this, okay? And if you can look and see who is at the gate, the shepherd is at the gate. In fact, the shepherd is the gate. So this is what they would do. They would just build an area if they needed to, if they couldn't use the natural terrain to do it, and everything went through the shepherd, okay? Anything trying to come in throughout was always the robber, always the one trying to steal the life of the sheep and lead the sheep into the wrong area. So that's all he's saying. I'm the gate. I'm the access point. I am the place to go. And he continues on. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Just a picture of a shepherd and sheep. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. So it's just, this is all it looks like, following Jesus, hearing his voice, reading scripture, which we get our direction, reading the New Testament, reading the letters of Paul, reading the Gospels. That gives us our direction. That gets us on the point of following Jesus. That's all this language is. Those who heard Jesus use this illustration didn't understand what he meant, so explain it to them. And Jesus had to do this quite often. They're like, what does that mean? Okay? What does it mean? There's sheep in this? Of course there is, okay? And of course the enemy tries to come in over the wall. And of course the only access point is through the shepherd. So he begins explaining to him. I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who come before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate, and those who come in through me will be saved. They will come and go freely and find, and here's the first picture he gives us, good pasture. Because if you had sheep, you had to find good pasture for them. So here's this picture. Listen, I will lead you in the right direction. I will lead you to the best place. And then he starts in with the verse we just looked at. All of this sets up this. The thief's purpose is to steal and to kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. There's just lots of things that offer, that look good, and ultimately their purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. It is not to make our life better. It's not to enhance our life. It's not to give us a rich and satisfying life. It's actually to take life from us. And Jesus said, totally different. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. In other words, the thief wants something from us, and Jesus wants something for us. The thief wants to take something away and diminish life. As tempting, come on, we've all been there, as tempting as the invitation is to leave the things that Jesus says, you know, and Jesus says, don't go there, don't do that, because I love you, I care for you, and man, they look enticing, it looks tempting, and we end up going that way, and it's the thief always wants something from us. It always wants to take from us, and Jesus wants to give something for us and to us. It's a huge difference when you begin to understand this whole idea of the rich and satisfying life. So, just to wrap up this morning, because the next 2 weeks are going to be about really helping us understand this. And I just want you to understand how important it is that all of us should be experiencing this. What is it? What is this whole idea of a rich and satisfying life? I think it's simply this, that following Jesus leads to, gives us a better life and allows us to be better at life. Leads to, gives us a better life and makes us better at life. I think that's ultimately where Jesus is inviting us to. Hey, following me, life better. Life is way better. Following me, I know. You saw the movie, right? It's something else. It's some other path. It's some other way. It's some other direction. I know everybody else, all your friends, you know, all the other kids in high school, they don't go that way. They don't follow that. They do whatever they want. I understand. But following Jesus leads to a better life, and it allows you to be better at life. And all the things that happen in life are better because of Jesus. So what do I mean by that better life? A meaningful life that lives for something more than itself. When you're inviting the way of Jesus and you are following him, you're invited into a meaningful life that lives for something that more than itself. And let's just be honest, that's just hard because we are just naturally inclined to put ourselves first, to put ourselves at the front of the line, to ask the question, how does this affect me first? I don't know if I can give because this might affect me doing something else later. And so we're always thinking about ourselves first and we put ourselves at the front of the line. Jesus then says, follow me. Because if you follow me and not yourself and not what everybody else says you should do, but if you follow me, it leads to a meaningful life that lives for something more than itself. And that is what every single person in this room wants. A life that lives for something than more than itself. I know we're tempted to think we want whatever we want and that will bring us happiness, and it never works. We want a meaningful life that lives for something more than itself. And better life. Do you realize that nothing stays the same? Everything changes when following Jesus. There's a reason for that. Because we need to be better at life. We need better at being parents. We need better at being a spouse. This is why, you know, even if, you know, your spouse is like, oh, I don't know about this whole Christian thing, but gosh, go for it, okay? I don't know about it for me, but go for it. Because why? Because it makes you a better spouse. Makes you a better employee. Every single employer in town should be like, okay, how do we find a way? I know it's wrong, we can't, but how do we find a way to hire any Christians? Because they're the best. They show up on time. They, in fact, show up early. They do their job, okay? They're never calling in with lame excuses for not showing up to work. I mean, it'd be awesome. So how do we find a way to only hire Christians because they're so amazing? Following Jesus makes you better at life, and it makes you better students, better spouse, better parents, better employees, better employer. It makes everything better. It changes everything when we follow Jesus. So, this is where we're going to camp out for the next 2 weeks. That following Jesus will make your life better and make you better at life. It'll make your life better and make you better at life. Next week, it'll make your life better. I want you to understand the next part that Jesus begins to teach in John 10, where he goes back to the sheep and he talks about what the sheep have in following him, how it changes our lives for the better. Following him. And then the week after that, all about this whole idea of better at life. Better at everything that we're a part of at life. But here's what I want you to do today. In fact, what I want you to do this week. I want you to ask this question. Am I living a rich and satisfying life? I just want you, you don't answer it. I'm just asking. I want you to ask that question in your life. I want you to ask that question. Am I living a rich and satisfying life? As I sit here and look at where I am and what's happening, am I living a rich and satisfying life? That's the only question I want you to think about this week. And when we come back next week, we're going to approach this whole idea that following Jesus will make your life better and make you better at life. And I want to pray for us this morning, ask God to just help us to ask that question this week. Am I living a rich and satisfying life?